It's not listed in here.
I know, we can just write it in. That's okay. That's what I did to the others, is I just wrote it in.
18, 19, 20.
Okay. Okay. We're back in session, in open session. We're going to do the evaluation of Miguel Bordadio, but I'd like to recognize Commissioner Michael Inchalco.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, as I did in the prior evaluation of the general manager for TPA, I'd just like to go over the conflicts of interest sections that are listed in 4GCA Chapter 15. I also checked 5GCA and 12GCA for any types of guidance on and laws that are requiring me to disclose any conflicts of interest. So just to be comprehensive, 4GCA Chapter 15, which is the standard of conduct for elected officers, appointed officers, and public employees of the government of Guam, under subsection 15205, conflicts of interest, it is defined as no employee, in this case an employee, is defined as employee means any nominated, appointed, or elected officer or individual employed with a territorial agency as defined herein, including members of the boards or commissions and persons under personal services contracts, and persons under personal services contracts. It defines a conflict of interest as no employee shall take any official action directly affecting business or another undertaking in which the employee has a financial interest. And the financial interest is defined as financial interest means any interest held by an individual, his or her spouse, natural, adopted, or dependent children, parents, parents-in-law, siblings, or siblings-in-law, in which an ownership interest in a business, a creditor interest in an insolvent business, an employment or prospective employment for which negotiations have begun, an ownership interest in personal or real property, a loan or other debtor interest, or a directorship or officership in a business. And although I do not identify any direct business in which I would participate or which Miguel would participate in, our company, Specific Unlimited, do bid on contracts for both utilities. It does not identify a first cousin as in the section F as it relates, but I do want to disclose that I am first cousins with Miguel. Our mothers are our sisters. And for that reason, although I cannot identify a specific conflict of interest that is defined by this, I would, just as a rule, because of our relationship, I'd like to recuse myself from the evaluation process of Miguel Bordadio.
Thank you very much. Commissioner Chalco, you're excused.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
You can pick your friends, but you can't pick your relatives.
Okay. Thank you, Mike.
Yep.
At this time, I also like to remind the commissioners that at the very beginning of today's meeting, Commissioner Francis Santos had also indicated a conflict because, as listed in Chapter 15, he is a brother-in-law, and that's listed as one of the conflicts for Commissioner, for General Manager Miguel Bordadio.
He
won't be sitting in. So there'll be three commissioners on leave: Mr. Sanchez, Commissioner Judy Guthitz, and myself. Okay. Miguel.
Sir.
Usually we let the candidate talk first.
I narrowed down my PowerPoint presentation to just 100 pages, sir.
Oh, right. Thank you very much.
Go to page 98.
Yeah, what we're going to do is, well, I'm sorry. Commissioner Sanchez, would you do the honors of explaining the ratings?
Oh, you want to do that before the presentation or after?
Yeah, let's do that right now.
Okay, all right.
Just so the employee understands the rules of the game.
Thank you, Mr. Bordadio. You will be evaluated on a scale of 1 to 5. A 5 means if you're rated a 5 in a particular category, and you'll be evaluated for both the for managing operations, for managing finance, managing people, managing information, and personal competencies. Managing operations represents 30% of your total performance score, and there are individual sections within that that we will ask you to comment on, and we will comment on with you as well. Managing finance is 15% of your total score. Managing people is 15% of your total scores. Managing information is 10% of your total score. And personal competencies, strategic planning, and things of that like are 30% of your score. But those are evaluated only by the commission. We don't expect you to have a specific presentation per se on those personal competencies. And we then ask you if you would consider rating yourself in the subsections of each of these categories before we rate you. And if you rate yourself a 5, in any particular category, we just ask that you give us a specific example of why you think you rated a 5. Similarly, the body is guided by the same thing. If a commissioner rates you a 5 in any section, we have to be specific as to what action or what basis it is that an individual commissioner rates you as a 5. Anything other than a 5, you can discuss to a great length or at no length at your discretion. Any questions on how the scoring works? We ask you to work with us. This is the first time we have been, we've created such a formal structure, but we believe it's worked very well for the other 6 colleagues that we've been reviewing. And it's dynamic. We may change it as we review you each year. But for now, this is the basis by which we will conduct your review. And it's for the periods 2018 to 2020 in particular. For the history, there was a review in 2018, and that's why we're asking to focus primarily on fiscal years 2018, 19, and 20. Since that last review, and actually I guess it was December of 2017. So, with that, where did our chairman go? We'll turn it over to you, but we need our chairman. Okay, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. So
we've gone through the basics, and then you want him to present first.
Yeah.
And then he knows about his self-review.
I was joking. I don't have a presentation to give you. However, I did prepare supporting material.
Sure.
For each of the commissioners.
Very good.
Thank you.
So there are 3 documents. The spreadsheet indicate and correspond to all of the performance criteria on the evaluation form.
Excellent.
It provides where there is supporting data, numbers that indicate performance under that specific criteria. And then these lines are spark lines, which just are there to indicate the trend of the values over the period from 18, 19 to 20. Okay. So there will be, wherever there's data included, you'll see the trend lines. And then for criteria where we don't necessarily have data sets, to exhibit performance, I've provided supporting narrative, which is the second document.
Okay.
And then the third document is Commissioner Guthert's request some time ago. She asked for a list of top 20 accomplishments. I included a list of 25.
Very good. Wonderful.
So you got the 20 and then 5 bonus.
Whoa, okay.
Okay. I have 2. Do I have 3? I only have 2.
1, 2. You have the top 25?
Yes, yeah, the one I did. Good. Thank you.
Okay.
So, at your pleasure, commissioners, I can go through each one of the criteria, if you should choose.
Okay.
Do you want to do it the same way we did with Mr. Beneventi? So we had Mr. Beneventi, just like you, go through your presentation.
All right.
Then we'll go to scoring, because as you pointed out, all your submittals are relevant to the way we will score your performance, and it helps kind of link them to do as you did by category and by box. And that's all very helpful to us.
Okay, so we'll start with the criteria 1.1, reliability of water and wastewater systems. It's broken down into several subcomponents. 1.1.1 is reduction in frequency and duration of outages. And I listed three data sets here. The first is main breaks per month. And you can see in fiscal year 18, we averaged 6. In fiscal year 19, we averaged 5.59. And in fiscal year 20, we averaged 2.75 main breaks per month. So the trend is decreasing, which is positive. The second is post-storm outages. And this one is presented in average days of service interruption per location for that fiscal year. And for fiscal 18, it was 1.86. 19, it was 1.5. And then 0 for fiscal 20, with no major storms causing any service disruptions. And then the third item is post-storm outages maximum day duration. So for any specific location during a storm, what was the maximum number of days service was interrupted? And in fiscal year 18, we had 4 days at a single location, which was the highest. In fiscal 19, we had 2 days only of post-storm interruptions. And that was the highest, and then 0 for fiscal year 20. Again, the trend is decreasing downward. Part of that is because of performance, and part of it is just because of weather. The next criteria is 1.1.2, water booster pump station reliability. We report this every month at the CC meetings, and you can see the averages are presented for fiscal year 18 at 93.7% operability, for fiscal year 19, 94.8% operability, and for fiscal year 20, 97.1% was the average. So an increasing trend of pump station reliability over the 3 years. 1.1.3 is reduction in the frequency or duration of SSOs, sewer system overflows. And you can see the performance is a little up and down here. In fiscal year 18, we averaged 10 SSOs per month. In fiscal year 19, it went up to 14. I believe we had heavier weather in 19. And then in fiscal year 20, it's averages at 7 per month. There's a note here, fiscal year 20 numbers reflect only 9 months of averages. My data there was limited. On the next one is 1.1.4, sewer pump station reliability. Again, this is something that we report on monthly at the CC meetings. And the averages for fiscal year 18 are 85.8%, for 19, 84.7%, and for 20, 87.2%. So overall, there's an increasing trend in reliability. However, this is still something that we are working to improve. 1.1.5, production well reliability. There's two metrics that we have here. One is the active wells per average number of active wells per month. And in fiscal year 18, it was 96. In 19, it was 99. And in fiscal year 20, it was 95. And I would point out that these are monthly averages by year, but we have made a concerted effort to try to reduce the number of wells in operation as part of our water loss control program. So if we can operate with less production and still provide adequate service levels, then it reduces the total of supply of water produced. And so that kind of helps us with our water loss control. The second one is the number of wells that we have on standby average per month. And for fiscal year 18, it averaged 4 wells. For 19, 6. And for 20, we averaged 9 wells on standby, which means we have more reserve capacity. And so this is an increasing trend, which is a positive. Moving on to 1.1.6, wastewater treatment plant reliability. The metric I use here is in terms of upgrades that have been completed for MPDS, our discharge permit compliance. And for fiscal year 18, we were 20% upgraded with 1 out of 5 permitted plants with MPDS permits being upgraded. That was the Agate Santa Rita that came online. And then in fiscal year 19, it went up to 25% because we took Vasa Gardens off that list and converted it into a pump station. That was in fiscal year 19. So it went to 25%. And then in fiscal year 20, Pneumatic Mariso came online. So 2 out of 4 for 50%. So it shows an increasing trend. And fairly soon, when we complete Northern District, that number will increase. For 1.1.7, maintaining service pressure levels, there's one metric that we're presenting. The low or no pressure calls, average calls per month, that's been up and down a little bit, 22 average calls for low or no pressure in fiscal year 18, 15 average calls per month for fiscal year 19, and then 32 for fiscal year 20. So that is an overall upward trend, which is not where we want to be.
Do you have a feel for what's causing that, the increase?
Yeah, we've had a lot more issues with wells tripping offline. The more recent year, simply because of the condition of the
power system,
and so that has resulted in various instances where we have
an increase in a number of events with
right.
Pressure.
There's also a narrative response regarding maintaining service levels for pressure. As you know, when we completed the 2018 master plan, we did establish, we went from 4 levels of service goals to 16 levels of service goals, which included one specifically addressing the range of pressure. The first 2006 master plan only said that we would maintain adequate pressure levels, but we have expanded that and included targets on the high end and the low end. So the 35 PSI to 90 PSI range. So we have those as goals now. And as you know, we are implementing the pressure zone realignment plan in order to make sure that within each pressure zone, we're between those two levels by making piping and valving improvements in the distribution system. But until this project is completed, we don't necessarily have a permanent way to monitor the pressure in every zone. So we're undertaking that right now with targeted areas where we know we have pressure problems, either high or low, to install pressure loggers there and monitor that specifically. And then if we ever get to an AMI metering system, then we would have the ability to measure pressure at the customer's, each customer's meter, and get that feedback regularly, so we'll be able to monitor. So that's where we are going in the future, and perhaps we'll set up different KPIs or different performance indicators later down the road.
Okay.
Moving on to 1.2, compliance of water and wastewater systems. 1.2.1 is compliance with drinking water standards. There's two metrics there, the number of NOVs per year, which has been zero across all of those years, 18, 19, and 20. And then the reporting of our CCR, Consumer Confidence Report, and drinking water quality report results, whether those are issued timely. And for all 3 years, it has been issued on time. 1.2.2 is compliance with effluent discharge permit requirements. Again, this relates to the wastewater treatment plants. And the information provided in the narrative essentially discusses what the compliance requirements have been under the court order. And then when the NPDES permits were issued after the 2009 denial of the 301H waivers, the requirement to comply with secondary treatment standards went into effect, and of course we've been technically in violation of that. We resolved that with Agate Santa Rita coming online. We resolved that by taking Bonza Gardens offline, so for 2 of our plants we addressed the issue. Humana and Riso, the upgrades have been completed, so that's the 3rd plant that we have, and then as you know we're working on Northern District, and then again in the future. So the narrative provides an explanation of that, shows some progress with respect to that criteria. 1.2.3, maintain internal QAQC processes. We don't have a metric or numbers for that, but I did provide a narrative. essentially explaining that part of the CCU's mandate to me was to bring on AGMs to assist with management so we could focus more. Part of the reason would be so we could focus more on quality control for the services that we offer. So we've made progress there in filling the AGM administration and support position, and that's filled right now. And then the AGM ops position, we have an interim or acting, which I hope to make permanent in that position as well. So we've made some progress there. We've also established a QAQC program for our meter program. So we're taking random samples of meters from that are deployed in the field and bringing them back for testing and quality control. And that is an ongoing effort. We have expanded it since we first started it to include equipment to allow us to do large meter testing, where we test the meters in place and don't have to bring them back to the test bench facility. So that's been another advancement in that area. And under the proposed reorganization structure, I did want to create, we have it now on our interim org chart, two overall QAQC positions, one as for overall field safety officer and another one for field compliance officer. And the idea for both of those would be that they would have authority over safety and compliance and overall operations in the field with the appropriate authority, and we would use those positions to stay in front of compliance issues and safety issues from other regulatory, outside regulatory bodies. So that's something that we hope to fill once we are able to staff up a little more in the compliance and safety division. Next, on 1.2.4, customer compliance programs. This is essentially our FOG program and cross-connection and control programs. And so we have metrics here indicating the number of inspections per year. So including re-inspections. So in fiscal year 18, we had 516. In fiscal year 19, we had 332. And in fiscal year 20, 91. But that's primarily because of the COVID impact, the decreased number of inspections. Criteria two for the FOG program, SSO is due to FOG by year. In fiscal year 18, 60 of the SSOs were attributed to FOG, 85 in 2019, and then 51 in fiscal year 20. So there's an overall reduction there. Cross-connection and control program, the number of inspections per year for fiscal year 18 was 30, for fiscal year 19 was 64, and for fiscal year 20 there have been 60. There's been a concerted effort to do those inspections, and we're augmenting our normal data set with meter flags, so we have any reverse flow meter flags that come up get sent to the compliance section for the cross-connection program for inspection. So there's been a lot of inspections in recent years. And then the fourth metric is the number of notice to comply and notice of violations issued by year. In fiscal year 18, there were only 11. In fiscal year 19, there were 46. And in fiscal year 20, there were 18. On 1.25, meeting our court order and consent decree requirements, the two metrics that we present on normally are quarter performance in terms of percentage of projects complete, 97.8 in fiscal year 18, 98.9 in fiscal year 19, and fiscal year 20. As you know, we only have one quarter project remaining to complete, and so it's going to flatten out until we get that done over the next 2 years. Moving on to 1.3. System safety, security, and resiliency. 1.3.1 is improved physical security. The metric there is best incidents per year.
There's still batteries here.
And in fiscal year 18, there were 24 incidents. Fiscal year 19, there were 52. And fiscal year 20, it was 16, and in the remarks section, you'll note that we had a spike in copper wire thefts that complaint of our remote rural sites during fiscal year 19, and that accounts for the increase. We responded by providing increased security services, and that number dropped. 1.3.2 is improved cybersecurity. The three metrics there are the employees trained by year. In fiscal year 18, we had 257. In fiscal year 19, 262 employees either trained or retrained, refresher training on cybersecurity provisions. And then in fiscal year 20, only 39. And again, this is due to COVID impact. We did not have our normal trainings because of that. Metric number two is cyber incidents reported by year. They're pretty low, 1, 2, and 1 over the 3-year period. And then the third metric is cyber, the 2018 cyber assessment findings that have been resolved. So you recall we did the penetration, net penetration testing and cybersecurity assessment. And so in fiscal year 18, we had resolved 19% of the findings. In fiscal year 19, that number had climbed to 60%, and fiscal year 20, it's at 71%. Moving to 1.3.3, ensuring a safe work environment. The metric we have there is the OSHA reports that we issued by year for reportable accidents. We had 3 in fiscal year 18, 2 in fiscal year 19, and 2 in fiscal year 20. So the numbers are relatively low. 1.3.4, maintain emergency response plan and readiness. Two metrics, one is one metric and one there, one narrative information to supplement that. For the emergency response plan and readiness, we've in the past limited our involvement to the overall Government of Guam emergency response plan. More in the years that, since I've been here, we have encouraged, and the operations guys have come up with this largely on their own, so I won't take the credit for it, but they've done a good job of coming up with their own crisis response plan and readiness checklist, and these are implemented now, and we saw the numbers I previously discussed about outages during storms. In large part, those numbers have come down because of what the ops guys have done in preparing those checklists and making sure that they're followed prior to each heavy weather event. And so we've, in addition to having the overall government emergency response plan, we have a crisis management plan internally, which we have beefed up, and we have increased the number of flex tanks that we have available, so the resources to respond to post-emergency recoveries has increased as well. So we've coupled that with some operational improvements in our ability to top off reservoirs prior to a storm, so that has also been a positive, which isn't necessarily reflected in any of the metrics. And then just for our formal emergency response plan, there's an annual review and then updates. And so for fiscal year 18, we did a review, also in 19, but in 20, we reviewed and updated and submitted that updated plan, I think, to USEPA. 1.3.5 covers the continuity of operations plan and readiness. Again, similar, the plan was updated in fiscal year 20, primarily in response to the COVID pandemic. And there's a narrative explanation on which we've been briefed on before, on essentially what measures we took and are now included in the continuation of operations plan, or the COOP as it's referred to. Moving forward, I think we can develop some performance indicators for this based on our formal adoption and annual review of the plan, as well as formal adoption and annual review of emergency or pandemic response standard operating procedures which have been put into place since COVID-19 hit. So all of those measures we're in the process of formalizing into standard operating procedures, and we will have annual reviews and updates of those, and that could be a future performance indicator. Moving on, 1.3.6, improve water resource and aquifer protection. As you know, we maintain a good working relationship with WERI and have supported their comprehensive aquifer monitoring program by providing sharing data with them, and then they provide us with a state of the aquifer report and additional guidance when we need it, or additional analysis when we need it. I'd like to report something that isn't currently covered by an existing program. It's, as you know, we are expanding the aquifer monitoring capabilities by putting in 7 new deep monitoring wells and rehabilitating 12 of the existing monitoring wells. So the ownership question of those wells we're working to resolve. There are essentially, we're trying to work with the Navy to establish ownership and responsibility to sustain those wells for the ones that are inside the fence and outside the fence. And so for outside the fence ones, we've established a list of whose property they're on, because they weren't put in by us, but we have a vested interest in the data that comes from those wells in order to help us monitor our water resource and to manage it properly. So we are working to secure either assignment of or ownership rights to those wells with the government of Guam for the various properties that they're on. And then the Navy is assuming ownership and maintenance responsibilities for all the ones that are located on base. And so that will be reflected in an appropriate memorandum of agreement through the One Guam initiative, which I will present to the board once it's close to finalization. So that's efforts that we are moving forward. We'll be able to define performance in this criteria. Okay, moving on to Section 1.4. Capital Improvement Program and System Renewals. 1.4.1, Updated Water Resource Master Plan. There's the two metrics here, the Water Resource Master Plan Review and Update, and then the 5-year CIP. So in fiscal year 19, both of those were updated. In fiscal year 18, both were updated. In 19, we reviewed the Water Resource Master Plan, and we established a new 5-year CIP. And for fiscal year 20, the Water Resource Master Plan was reviewed and the 5-year CIP was updated. 1.4.2 is Achieve Target CIP Spending Plan. And this is tracked by CIP expenditures by year. So for fiscal year 18, our target was $71.9 million, and we expended $45.9 million. In fiscal year 19, our target was $29.5 million, and we expended $156 million in capital improvements. And for fiscal year 20, we expended $40.8 million, and our CIP target was $112 million. And I will note that for fiscal year 20, that number is low in part because of the delay in securing bond funding that was part of the target, $1.12 million for that fiscal year.
Miguel, I apologize. The CIP asterisk was the target or the actual?
The CIP number in parentheses is the target.
Is the target. So in 2018, you were below the target, but in 2019, you exceeded the target significantly.
Right.
And when I add the cumulative, 196 to 241 to the targeted, you're actually a little ahead of the total. It's the total target was about 212, and you've done 196 plus 40, 230 million.
Right.
So over the 3-year period, even though some you were ahead, some you were below, on a cumulative basis, the actual CIP has exceeded the target when
right.
you add them together.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
There is also a supplemental narrative regarding the targets, and essentially that's the moving forward part I would like for us, as is spelled out in the financial program in the 20-year master plan that was adopted by the CCU. The idea is to move towards revenue funding of our annual CIP renewals and debt financing only of, for lack of a better word, the lumpy capital improvement projects like new treatment plants, new pump stations, but annual pipe replacements and those things should be funded out of revenues.
Okay.
And so we've not proposed those targets yet, but moving forward, we hope to, and then that'll be a metric by which we can track progress on this particular performance criteria. Okay. Moving to 1.4.3, achieve water system expansion goals. There is a narrative supplement for our existing, kind of explaining our existing line replacement program. Since 2012, we've had a line replacement program that has gone through, I think we're on phase five now. So it's been through five phases. That has resulted in the installation of over 98,000 linear feet or 18 or so miles of water distribution piping. And that's, you know, replacement of existing and expansion of piping to larger sizes. So we're currently working on several expedited projects that the board is very familiar with because of the many complaints that we do get about Paulo Ferdinand Street in Santa Rita, for example, which is in construction. Casimiro on Tari Road, which I believe is in procurement, and Toto Cunhada Road, which is pending procurement. So we're in the final stages of design, resolving some easement issues on that, and then we're putting out the bid. So these are what we have accomplished and the work that we've done in recent years and continuing to today. But in the 20-year master plan that provides additional metrics for this, we do have two programmatic items. The asbestos cement pipe replacement program, which is scheduled for a start of fiscal year 22. So we have not expended any CIP money under those specific CIP line items yet. But for the ACP pipe, we will in fiscal year 22. And then for the 2-inch galvanized replacement project spending, we were supposed to spend $2.73 million in fiscal year 20, which we did not. Again, that in part was due to our delay in getting the CIP approved and the financial plan approved.
Miguel, I'm sorry, how many linear feet in this have you added or upgraded?
98,000 linear feet.
During this 3-year period, right?
Since 2012, sorry.
Oh, since
2012.
Okay.
Moving to 1.4.4, achieve wastewater system expansion goals. There are two metrics, and then there's also a narrative supplement provided for you. Essentially, that describes the work that we've done since 2016 in working with EPA to try and identify customers on septic tanks that are within 200 feet of existing GWA sewer lines to try and encourage connection to the public sewer. We also have an existing sewer connection revolving fund for a loan program, but it is meagerly funded and is not very user-friendly. The requirements to obtain a loan under it are pretty onerous, and therefore not too many people take advantage of it. And even if they did, we wouldn't have enough funding to have many people on the program itself. So we do have in the master plan a septic tank elimination program that was identified and which does call for capital improvement project spending to expand the wastewater collection system by 5,000 linear feet per year starting in fiscal year 22. So we are currently conducting an analytical study which will include recommendations on how to improve the septic tank, or I'm sorry, the sewer connection revolving fund. Proposals that have been made and will be presented in that analytical study include bumping up the total amount available for the revolving loans, and easing the requirements to qualify for the program, and then also a public outreach effort to try and get more people to connect. So those are some of the anticipated ways that we could track this area of performance. The metrics that are listed here are essentially just the septic tank elimination program spending, which won't be applicable, as I mentioned, until fiscal year 22, and then the sewer connection revolving fund, the active accounts. You can see that for fiscal year 18 and 19, there were only two active accounts, and then 20, we got one more, so we're up to three. 1.4.5, achieve non-revenue water and water loss reduction goals. There's a narrative that's been provided to supplement the metrics that are listed here, which essentially explain the difference, the evolution of our water loss control program from what it was, more of a project-based leak detection and repair program, to something that is now more multifaceted and comprehensive, which, you know, the bulleted items that are listed there include the production meter replacements. As I mentioned, we do, if we reduce the amount of water we produce, it helps the overall ratios for water loss control. Master meter installations, pressure zone realignment project, which I mentioned previously, which is now in construction. The pilot testing of satellite leak detection for us to be able to identify leaks in areas where water lines are not documented, such as in undeveloped areas and in former military properties where we've inherited the system. And then also the pilot testing of district metered areas to establish discrete areas where we can monitor the water supply going in and the customer demand and compare those two numbers to see where there are leaks and then perform targeted leak detection and repair. And based on that pilot test, we've seen a water loss recovery of 45% on average in three different areas, so we know that it can be effective. And so our future efforts will be focused on establishing permanent district metered areas across the distribution system island-wide. The metrics that are presented here for you, 2A, 2B, and 3, are the AWA water audit percent non-revenue water by year. For fiscal year 18, that was 47%. That's calculated by the water audit software. And for fiscal year 19, it dropped to 43%. And then for fiscal year 20, it dropped to 40%. Now, keep in mind that these numbers incorporate all of the unbilled, unmetered, and unbilled metered figures, which don't necessarily show up in when we get our annual audit, the financial non-revenue water calculation. It's a different calculation, so the numbers will appear differently, but it is showing a steady decrease over the 3-year period.
So McGill, is this the, from a more simplified ratepayer point of view, this is that water loss challenge. Is this the where you're measuring the actual water loss of what we pump out versus what we sell and the differential?
Using the AWWA method.
Using
yes.
The AW, which is the national standard for most water utilities.
Right.
This is the one where it's a little more, is this the one where it's a little more refined? We net out the water that we use.
Right.
It's been a perception created in large part by reality in ourselves that, you know, you hear the number 60% water loss, but these numbers are in the low, you know, below 50 and are now in the low 40s. Is this a more accurate reflection of the actual water loss that is occurring net of what we're using plus just
right.
The loss that is out there? Would we be comfortable in presenting to the public, or would you be comfortable in presenting to the public that our new water loss ratio is 40% versus the historically perceived 60%? Because one, in part, there's been work done.
Right.
How do you go from, you know, not so good to better? You do work. And does this 47% to 43% to 40%? reflects the work that's being done by your team, you and your team, and is it a more accurate public number we should share with the public that says now with the refinements that we've made using the same national criteria that all other water systems use, our non-revenue water, we used to call it unaccounted for water, which is actually non-revenue water, technically accurate, is now down to 40% from the perception over many years that it was well over 50 to 60%.
So I would say I'm comfortable sharing the numbers. I mean, we do, when we present the water audit numbers to the board, they are shared with the public, but we haven't proactively, for example, sent out a mailer on this. And it's a bit difficult to explain the technical reasons why the numbers are different. When the annual audits are done, you're looking at the gross number that we produce and buy from the Navy, and then the gross or the amount that we sell to our customers or bill to our customers, and the difference is that is what gets reported as water loss, which is not actually the case. The numbers that we produce, in part because of some of the work that we're doing, the production meter replacement, we found based on the analysis associated with that project during the design phase, that the metering inaccuracies in our production meters, as they are configured,
was overstated.
Is overstated.
Was overstated the amount that we were pumping out.
Right, and so
that overstates the loss.
The AWWA method is a robust analysis which allows you to include metering inaccuracies both in production and in demand. Right. The other issue that we faced, the financial data only shows what billing data that we have, and you know that we've had an ongoing meter problem which we've now resolved. But historically, and these numbers here reflect that history, we are showing we're under registering what is actually being consumed. Mm-hmm. And so that number contributes to a higher water loss based on finance numbers. But when we do the AWWA method, we have a sound basis based on our meter test data on what the metering inaccuracies are, and we can apply that factor, and then it tightens up the numbers. So part of it is tightening up the data, which we have spent a lot of effort doing over the last several years.
Better measuring tools, basically.
Right. Better data, yeah. Better numbers, right? And so that's what's being reflected here. So the non-revenue water, as a metric, shows a decline. The real water, real losses, which is the stuff based on AWWA's method, what actually leaks out of the pipes, that has also declined from 37% to 27% based on the AWWA method and this more robust analysis. So there is an improvement. To answer your question about sharing it with the public, part of our water loss control plan that's being done right now, the analytical study, AWWA has last year shifted away from using percentage of non-revenue water as a metric. And they are recommending an upgrade of the standards and proposing new metrics. We are hoping to incorporate those new metrics and then provide a standard reporting format, which we will then use to report to the PUC on an annual basis what our water loss control accomplishments have been. And so I would say it would be better to wait until we get that and then roll out a very comprehensive public outreach on that specific topic.
But both 2A and 2B show a declining trend in non-revenue water.
Yes.
Using the national standard. And there has been the popular perception that, you know, we're well north of 50, maybe 60% water loss in prior years. These two metrics suggest that we're clearly reducing that water loss through leak repair and better meters, because that's a key piece. Is the meters have to measure, right? And we may have been, it looks like we have been overstating the amount of water we were pumping into the system to begin with, which would overstate the amount of water you were losing. These two metrics are, would you feel safe professionally? Would the commission be correct in taking this data and sharing with the public, or you sharing with the public, that there's been a steady trend of reducing the amount of water loss, whether you call it non-revenue water, or, you know, the different explanations that are used out of the general public. This is an indication of a steady decline in the amount of water loss in the system.
Yeah, I'm comfortable with the commission discussing the downward trend. The specifics of the numbers is so technical, I'm not so comfortable with the commission discussing that. with the general public, but, you know, as I said, once we get the water loss control program done, the recommended metrics from AWWA, and we present and package that in comparison to where our history has been, I think the picture will be much clearer, and then you'll have a much easier time discussing it.
So you're suggesting that while there's a very encouraging trend, you're still creating the measurement metrics that you professionally, as our GM, would be more comfortable, that it is a more accurate reflection of the actual loss of the system within the system, but clearly there's a very good trend going in the right direction, that all the different pieces of the puzzle, line replacement, meters, is contributing to lower and lower water losses within the system.
Right. Okay. And that's also reflected in the last metric that's shown there. You can see that this is the average number of leak repair backwater backlog at the end of any given day. So over fiscal year 18, that averaged 70 work orders outstanding. In fiscal year 19, that went down to 9 and per average. And fiscal year 20, the average is 6. So
you're fixing
pressure line unit has done a great
fewer leaks in the system that are requiring requiring repairs.
Right.
It's a combination of a lot of things: meters, fixing, and then better reading of how much you're actually pumping on the system. There's a lot of different things, and you know, people think even looking only at the finances side, they just see that different number and they say, "Oh, you're just leaking water somewhere." And this is a beautiful thing you're doing, and when you finally get it all fixed up with your pressure zones and all that other stuff, we're going to be able to give a really good picture of what we're doing, what our water company, and show the improvement in the water company. So I'm very impressed. Okay.
Moving on to 1.5, long-term strategic objectives. 1.5.1 is to advance the GWA and DOD system integration. I've provided a narrative supplement on what we have accomplished over the past several years with the One Guam Initiative. I think commissioners are very familiar with the initial proof of concept project, which was a one-year test, and we've now under several years of successful operation and renewal of that license for us to operate their system. We also advanced the second interoperability initiative, the Santa Rosa Reservoir Intertie between our reservoir and the Air Force's reservoir. We advanced it as far as we could. We could not get the Air Force to sign off on that. They had reservations about our reliability. Perhaps there's some reason for that with all the news that was all of our problems up at Santa Rosa, which I think as in the last couple of years have not really been any problems. We were more reliable with our production wells and our ability to maintain the levels in the reservoir and the system up there. And we are, of course, building a new reservoir, a new booster pump station. That's part of our capital improvement program. So we've taken that as far as we can go, you know, and if the Air Force ever decides that they're willing to do the intertie, we've constructed up to the fence line, and we have the design plans to complete it, and we'll just wait until they're ready if they want to do it. But we also are currently redrafting the framework in coordination with the Navy and Department of Defense on what the future projects interoperability opportunities will be. And so once that's done, I'll have a better method of tracking performance and providing the commission with updates on that.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Chair. And how long have we now been running Maui wells? How many years has the Navy continued this relationship?
I want to say since 2017.
Our third year?
Yeah.
Thank you.
And we moved what are we doing now, a license agreement?
It's still a license, but I think they're looking at extending the term to 5 years as opposed to 1 year. So
an annual renewal of the license, maybe making it every 5 years?
Yeah.
But you've had three annual renewals, and now they're talking about moving to a metric that says, let's see you every 5 years. We're willing to give you 5-year operational permit. Right? Yeah. So that's just, I mean, they're getting more and more confident with our ability to preserve that, run that resource.
And there have been requests about the possibility of us supplying additional water than was originally agreed to in the MOU for the marine cantonment.
Because of the way we're running it?
I think in part they have their own constraints in terms of their projects and Milcon issues and so on.
But you can generate the water from that well, from the Maui well, right?
Well, we're ready to supply what we, the portion that we agreed to in exchange for operating the well. But what we're looking at now is, in addition to that, can we supply much more? And we're currently evaluating it. It may take some additional improvements for us to do that, but the fact that there is a request means that there, in my eyes, it's a positive because it means there's a little more trust in our ability to...
Confidence in our ability to run the system.
And have them as a customer.
And when we feed the new Blas camp with water, how will that impact the water that... Right now, we, GWA, use that water for our customers, correct? And then when the Blas camp comes in, we're actually doing some water trading with the Navy. And is it from Maui wells or is it other wells that we're trading on?
It's from our system. So
our system, right.
The way the distribution system is aligned, it's not necessarily true that what gets produced at Tumau Maui comes up.
Right.
You know, water generally flows in the other direction, right, from the north towards the south, right? So, but we're able to supply water because what we're producing at Tumau Maui satisfies the demand that was previously placed on wells in the north. So,
and those wells in the north will be what the source of the Blas camp water.
And so there would be a volume for volume exchange. Mm-hmm. So we would benefit from that in offsetting what we purchased from the lake.
That's with the FINA lake, right? In other words,
for what we purchased down south.
So instead of purchasing for them and selling to them, we're exchanging volume.
Right.
That's a better deal.
Mm-hmm. We should set up a rate for what we... Well, we're doing it volumetrically, right?
Yeah.
Well, okay, so that's to our advantage.
That's
our advantage. I was thinking, or go to the PUC and whatever they're charging, charge them a buck more per million gallon.
No,
but
volume
exchange
is
perfect.
Because their costs are going to continue to go up.
Next, for long-term strategic objectives, 1.5.2, improve investment grade credit ratings. This is a tall order. There's three metrics there for the three different rating agencies that have worked with us in the past. And you can see they've been stable for fiscal year 18 and 19, and then in fiscal year 20, we did receive an upgrade for the Fitch rating. There's some positive performance there. And I, you know, despite...
Some people are slower than others.
But I think it's a testament to the utility in general that we were able to maintain the ratings in light of our borrowings post-pandemic.
Yes.
So that was a feat in and of itself, I believe. 1.5.3, balance long-term debt financing and revenue financing. This is, there are several metrics here that we present. First is a ratio of bond dollars to IFCIP dollars by year. And you can see in fiscal year 18, the ratio was 12.58. So for every IFCIP dollar, we borrowed 12 and a half bond dollars. The ratio in fiscal year 19 was 16, and in fiscal year 20, it's 9.37. So
that's an improvement.
And then, McGill, are you going to somewhere here speak about the... we've done a refinancing, that created some interest savings for ratepayers.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You'll talk about that somewhere in this section on debt financing and revenue.
In the accomplishments section. It's all the bond financings that I've overseen are there, and so I believe that's there. But I don't think I have a specific mention on that here.
Right, because I mean, part of the reasons you're able to generate some internally financed cash flow for projects is by refinancing and saving on interest payments. We can take those savings and start to build up the funding source for our internal So which does two things. We're not needing it for rates, and we're building CIPs without borrowing money. And those have long-term savings to ratepayers.
So the rest of the matrix?
The next metric is bond dollars spent per year. $59 million in fiscal year 18, $52 million in fiscal year 19, and $27 million in fiscal year 20. Again, that's in part because of the delay in getting the REIT plan approved and the bonds issued.
So this is basically money you're finishing off of the $670 million, right?
Correct.
Okay.
The third is IFCIP, internally funded or revenue funded capital improvement project spends per year. And so in fiscal year 18, we spent $4.7 million, fiscal year 19, $3.2 million, and $3 million in fiscal year 20. And then number four, the metric is annual asset removal dollars versus IFC dollars, IFCIP dollars by year. And so you can see $14 million was the goal, $4.7 million was what we spent, $15 million in fiscal year 19 versus $3.3 million for what we spent. And then for fiscal year 20, $3 million was the goal, and $2.9 million was what we spent. Moving on to 1.54, improve or maintain the affordability of service. So there's two metrics that are presented here, and then I also have some narrative on what our future plans are. For number one, the average annual bill per year, you can see it's gone up slightly, 1,100 over the course of the year for the average residential bill. Went up by $4 in fiscal year 19, and then by another $200 in fiscal year 20.
$100 in fiscal 20.
Sorry, $100 in fiscal 20.
Yeah.
Over the course of the year. Mm-hmm. So it's slightly increasing. Part of what's in the narrative explains that it's in light of our very ambitious capital improvement program that's required for the court order and upcoming consent decree projects. We have to balance, you know, that program and the funding that is required for that funding and the rate relief that is required in order to implement those projects. And so it's very difficult. The other metric that's presented is your combined water and sewer bill as a percentage of median household income by year. And this is something that we track. It has been used. These percentages have been used primarily by regulatory agencies to establish the utility's ability to raise capital for projects that are compliance related. And so you can see the numbers from fiscal year 2018 through 20 is 2.28%. And then in 2019, it's 2.29% of median household income. And in fiscal year 20, it's 2.49%.
This is where they target it to be 4% or below?
Correct.
All right. So we're running in the mid-2s.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
The narrative provides additional information on what we're doing to maintain affordability of service. As you know, we are conducting an analytical study on an affordability program, which would make recommendations for a customer assistance program for the most vulnerable segment of our customer base. We do anticipate that when that analytical study is completed, we will be presenting to the board some recommended options for that, for the board to decide on. And then that will establish performance metrics for this category moving forward. 1.5.5, improve and maintain liquidity reserves. Metric provided here is daily cash flow versus the actual by month. And you can see it's 344. Sorry. As a goal, and then 339 days of cash as the actual for fiscal year 18. And then 359 days was the goal for fiscal year 19, and we had 383 actual. And then for fiscal year 20, the goal was 389 days, and we had 470 days of cash on hand as actual. And then 1.5.6, achieve personnel composition migration objectives. The metric here is the market percentile goal versus the actual by year. And for fiscal year 18, we were at 10%, and we were at 10%. For fiscal year 19, we were at 20%, but we hadn't implemented that. And for fiscal year 20, it's at 20%, and we had not implemented that.
But you're implementing it now.
We're working on it, sir.
You're working on it. Okay.
So moving on to, that takes care of the operational performance criteria. Moving on to the finance performance criteria. 2.1 is financial capacity to meet operational needs. And the metric is revenue budget to actual by year. And so for fiscal year 19, our budget, revenue budget was about $112 million, and we finished with about $109 million. For fiscal year 19, it was $112.7 million, and we finished at $111.9 million. And for fiscal year 20, our target, adjusted budget was $105 million. And we finished at 96.8 million. And this is obviously due to the impacts of the COVID-19 pandemic. 2.2 is manage operational expenses to meet budget levels. So the metric is O&M expenses budgeted to actual by year. So for fiscal year 18, we had a budget of 84.5 million, and we spent slightly over at 86.5. For fiscal year 19, we had a budget of 89.0 million, and we came in under that at 84.9 million. And for fiscal year 20, we had a budget of 85.4 million in operating O&M expenses, and we came in at 78.7 million. So we are effectively managing our O&M budgets over the course of the 3 years. 2.3. The criteria is to meet or exceed minimum debt service coverage targets, and the metric is debt service coverage ratio goal versus actual by year. So our debt service coverage ratio in fiscal year 19, the actual was at 1.73, and fiscal year 19 was 1.51, and fiscal year 20 we finished at 1.30. As you know, we recently established policy levels of 1.4 as a target, and so we're below that for fiscal year 20, but it's because of the pandemic. 2.4 is to maintain cash reserve funding levels, and we have two metrics, the unrestricted cash reserve goal versus actual, and the specific reserve fund target versus actual. So for the unrestricted cash, the goal was 2.9 million, and we had 3.9 million in fiscal year 18. Fiscal year 19, 4.8 million was a target. We had 5.0, so we exceeded. And in fiscal year 20, 2.5 million was the goal, and 5.6 million was the actual. So again, we exceeded that. On the specific reserve fund, 24.7 million was a goal in fiscal year 2018, and our actual was 25 million. So we were in excess of our goal. For fiscal year 19, it was 25 million that was the goal, and our actual was 25.5 million. And in fiscal year 20, the goal again was 25 million, and we were at 25.7 million. So we've exceeded our goals on financial performance. 2.5, identify cost efficiencies and reduce waste. I did provide a very short supplemental narrative on that. We don't necessarily have a good metric point for this. But we will develop it, continuing to work with our internal auditor and the CFO to identify areas for efficiencies and reducing waste. And I think the audit committee, since Commissioner Guthridge has come on board, has been more formalized, and the auditor took us a while to find a replacement auditor. Once we did, she's been very good about putting together an audit plan and sticking to that plan as long as she doesn't get additional assignments from me. Unfortunately, she gets lots of additional assignments from me. And so it's been proactive. It's been a good relationship, and I think the organization itself has reacted very well to the IA and is assisting to identify areas for improvement in efficiencies and reduction of waste. So overall, I would say that we're moving in the right direction. It's just been a little slow going. moving on to 3.0, human resource management. There are four sub-criteria here. 3.1, improved recruitment and retention. There's two metrics that we're offering here. The first is average days to fill a position, an open position. So we weren't tracking it in 2018, but in fiscal year 19, the average number of days to fill a position was at 72, and in fiscal year 20, we brought that down to 49. This is in large part due to the AGMA's focus and efforts on this. And then the second metric is average monthly full-time employee vacancies. We had, on average, 63 for fiscal year 18. We reduced that to 49 in fiscal year 19, and we're down to 29 in fiscal year 20. 3.2, improve and maintain succession planning. I don't have a data set for this, but I do have a narrative which describes measures that we are taking to try and improve succession planning within, especially within the operational divisions. I've made efforts for each of the critical supervisory positions in operations for an alternate to be appointed. Necessary, of course, in the event of an emergency, but also in terms of encouraging individuals to improve their performance and step up to the plate in terms of making operational decisions and taking on more responsibility and kind of seeing interaction with management in action. So the seconds are invited to attend the PM meetings with their respective AGM and alternate so that they get a flavor for that and then provide a pathway for their succession into higher positions. So it's been a little bit of a struggle with losing people because of the competition we face from other entities that require certification of operations employees, such as ECSP. The next metric is...
Is that a pay challenge?
Primarily, okay. Yeah. We've had very rare instances, guys that left for more money, did not enjoy working there or felt more fulfilled working. I've had one guy come back and tell me that he felt more fulfilled working here.
Would he like to check over there?
Well, he came back.
Oh, he came back. Well, yeah. There you go. Okay.
That was one rare instance. Most of the time the travel was in the other direction.
Notwithstanding fulfillment, they like the check.
That's one of the things I think that the CCU noticed a long time ago, Simon, when we passed that resolution, to attract and retain good employees.
Yeah, that's the whole CTP law.
That's the whole CTP law and the migration plan.
Yeah, yeah.
And, one of the things I have to tell you, it's a commitment we've made and we've got to stick to it because... I'm reminded of a story back before I joined the CCU. We needed a good generation person. The generation guy came along and everybody liked him. Everybody thought he was very good. And he ended up wanting $192,000 or $198,000, something like that.
He wanted significantly more money than we paid our general manager to run that runs the entire system. This is just the generation guy.
The generation guy. That's the problem. I mean, and unfortunately, a lot of people out there don't understand. We're different from guys, I always say this, and I don't mean to knock the rest of the government, but we're really different. We're the essential part, so thank you. We have to improve somehow. Okay.
Okay. 3.3. Moving on to 3.3, improve employee satisfaction and pride. The metric. We have here is employee survey results. We did a baseline in 2017, which falls under fiscal year. It was in fiscal year 18. We have not done an update in 19 or 20, but we are. We already have, I believe, a procurement to update a combined customer satisfaction and employee satisfaction survey. So we're working on the update for that. We do have. Also, a employee recognition program that the AGMA as drafted for me. We were supposed to start it in fiscal year 20, but because of the COVID pandemic, we did not. So we're trying to pick that back up and set it in motion. So hopefully we have improved metrics to give you next year. And last on this section is 3.4, enhance employee training and development. First metric is in-house training for employees by year. We had 12 trainings in fiscal year 18, 13 in fiscal year 19, and only 5 in fiscal year 20. Again, that's a result of the pandemic. And the second metric is the number of EPA certified employees by year. Keep in mind that this is employees and employees maintain individual or multiple individual certifications across different areas of operational responsibility. So there were 79 in fiscal year 18, 80 in fiscal year 19, and 84 in fiscal year 20. So we're making slow improvements there.
Well, I think just for the record, when Commissioner Guthertz and I joined the commission in 2003, QWA had less than 10, in fact, I want to say probably less than 5 that were certified, and now we're steadily keeping that 80s and above. So that's a huge difference, and that's a tribute to our own employees obtaining and maintaining certification, and yet management always making sure that it's required. And it's leading. It's why we're able to serve our ratepayers better, because we have better trained, formally certified employees working for us than we had 20 years ago.
So the narrative provides some additional background on that point, Commissioner, and indicates the work that management has done to, first of all, partner with Guam EPA, whereas before the certifications were only offered once or twice a year, twice if we were lucky. And then so the employees had to wait until it was offered to take it. There wasn't necessarily training available until right before the exam, and then they'd have to wait 4 months to find out the results. Through our work with EPA, we were able to get UOG to administer computer-based testing, and so now that's the way that our employees are being tested, and it's it can be as frequently as weekly, and then once they take the test, computer-based test, the results are immediate. They know whether they pass or fail. They get an idea of the metrics of where they need to improve. And so that has been a vast improvement in the process. And so EPA was very cooperative in working with us to get that done. And I think it has resulted in more of our younger guys being wanting to take the test and to get certified. The other thing that was done is we partnered with the local subsection of the American Waterworks Association, the Western Pacific subsection, and developed a training program where GPA operators get hands-on training more frequently than they did previously with the EPA-administered training. And so now, trade professionals, professional engineers, and also people with training background for operators are providing training to our guys, and we also purchased AWWA training materials, and it's in the subsection's library, but it's made available to our employees, so they can take the material home and train at their leisure instead of waiting for a class to be offered once or twice a year. So I think that has been a positive development. Moving on to 4.0, management of information. The first criteria is public filing requirements. We have several metrics, our annual report, filing dates by year. So we, in fiscal year 18, it was in March of 20, and unfortunately for the remaining fiscal years, we don't have the metrics yet. But we will, for fiscal year 20, we will file in after the new year. The second metric is the US EPA annual water quality report. It was filed in June of June 2019 for fiscal year 18, and May of 20. So keep in mind that the water quality data for fiscal year 18 is published in fiscal year 19, right? So it's the complete year's worth of data that's required. So we will, for fiscal year 20, we will publish in 2021. The third metric is the OPA's citizen-centric report filing dates by year. For fiscal year 18, was filed in June of 19. For fiscal year 19, it was filed in July of 20, and it's yet to be filed for 2021. And then the fourth metric is our bond and DAC filing dates by year. And we filed in June of 2018 for fiscal year 18, June of 19 for fiscal year 19, and June of 20 for fiscal year 20. So those are all timely filed. 4.2, improve the accuracy of public and media communications. There is no metric, there's no data set for this, but there is a narrative which essentially explains some of the measures that we've taken to improve the accuracy of our operational reporting to our customers. We've issued guidelines for vetting information through the appropriate operations manager, specifically for whatever issues being covered prior to any media releases going out. And then for our Water Systems Control Center and dispatch operators, we've standardized the format of media releases for outage notifications and so on and so forth. So that has improved our the accuracy of our communications with the media and public announcements.
I have one question.
Sure.
Thank you. On
4.2.
Yeah.
It's a misnomer.
Yeah, okay. 4.2. You indicated in your little explanation that you've engaged a media communications consultant.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
So,
who is that, a company or a person?
Yes, it's a company.
Uh-huh.
So we put out an RFP. Several companies responded to the RFP. The selection committee reviewed all the materials and selected Abe Roman as our media and public relations consultant. They have helped us so far with immensely with the COVID-19 response messaging and developing our public outreach during the pandemic. That wasn't necessarily what we hired them for, but they were available and assisted us, so they've done a good job with that. But we did bring them on to improve our public outreach, kind of help us with the long-standing perceptions that people, the public has about GWA and our performance. So, you know, we are we're investing a lot of money in improving the system and improving our levels of service. And we felt we needed to make a corresponding investment in how we message that and how we present it across multiple platforms and through social media.
Is that a local company?
Yes, they're local.
Are they working also with your PIO person?
They work with the PIO, yeah.
That's good.
Or communication network.
But they're trying to make a broader structure, right?
They are, and part of the scope of work is to develop a strategy for that, which what is in process and was started, but kind of got interrupted by all the work we had been doing with the COVID, the pandemic response. But
good.
We are working on it.
Good.
4.3, broad public outreach for GWA CIP and system improvements. The metrics that were provided here are the number of public meetings that we've held, both for the Water Resource Master Plan updates, which was 6 in fiscal year 2018, and then also for the 5-year rate plan and capital improvement program that. There were 6 public meetings that we held for that. And these are only the ones that are, I think for the 5-year CIP, there are 3 of our own and then 3 for the PUC, but there were multiple meetings that were held in addition to that, just with various industry groups and trade groups and public clubs. For fiscal year 20, we've not had to do any of that, and of course, our public engagement has been limited, of course, due to the pandemic. 4.4, maintain or enhance management reporting to the CCU, provided a little bit of a narrative on that in the supplement. And essentially, it just points out that management is taking great efforts to try and streamline and present the data that we report on every month to the CCU in a more digestible format, providing more tabular and graphical information. And with the new media consultant that we, or the new communications consultant that we have on board, the intent would be for us to develop reporting information that is easily translate to other platforms. So once it's posted, it'd be easily viewable on your phone or on your mobile device. So we're going to work on that. That's the intent. And the final, under 4.5, meet all compliance reporting requirements. And the metric is a court order report filing dates by year and by quarter. And we've achieved 100% compliance reporting four times a year in each of the 3 years. So we've met our performance metrics on that.
Is there anything else going on?
No, he's got his popcorn.
Other than this, is there, what else? Aren't you doing something?
He's got one more thing. The popcorn and fries.
Well, that's...
This is the narrative
supplement.
That's
for information.
You talked about the narrative supplement. I was going kind of back and forth, right?
That's this one.
And then Commissioner Guthertz is the top 25.
Yeah, so I guess in other evaluations, this was included in the form. I did not do that. I just presented them in a list here. And I broke them up into categories, operations, capital improvement program, training and personnel, administration of finance, and then lastly, compliance and regulatory accomplishments. And so I know you asked for 20. I gave you more than you asked for.
Yeah, thank you.
But I only included the ones that I thought were fairly important. And these, of course, are not necessarily solely my accomplishments. They're the accomplishments of the organization, and I think all the employees deserve credit for their respective contributions.
Actually, one of the hard things when we're evaluating general managers, and Commissioner Sanchez has stepped up for a minute, but when we evaluate general managers, we realize that part of the thing is your ability to manage people below you to get all these things done. Mm-hmm. So, we realize you don't do all of this personally, but you still need a leader who
pull it together,
who can pull it together and make sure you motivate the people below you to do the work and to get the stuff done. I've got to say I'm very impressed with your presentation today.
I'm
blown away.
This is data-driven. I love it.
Yeah, it's very
I'm a data person, too, so I really love it.
So, Miguel, it's a tribute to your whole organization. Whatever we say about you, it reflects on your organization.
This is really a first for all of us as well, going through this process. And it's very important.
I was just making a statement that I'd like to repeat because you're back in the room, is that, we realize that all these things that are happening, Miguel doesn't do everything by himself. He manages a group of people, and to his credit, he's a good manager, in a lot of these things. And I was blown away with this, and, really, one of the things for me, when I look at managers, because that's the key, the key to our organizations is the general manager. To me, there's three C's. There's competence, caring, and then commitment.
Yeah.
And those are the three C's for me. And, that's why these jobs are so important. I know there are a lot of directors out there, but, really, competence is key. This is not a place to do on-the-job training. Sometimes, and I've been a director. And Commissioner Guthers is a director. And, running a department like Revenue Tax, you have to know some competence. You have to be competent. Because you have to make sure the people move where you need them to move. And And I have to tell you, I had a lot of good people working with me. And I used to remember every time I was out in public, I used to say, hey, I've got a lot of people, and they're all working hard, and they're all making me look good, but it's really a group effort. And one of my employees once said to me, oh, you like to give us a lot of credit. I said, yeah, because when things go wrong, I'm going to say, I got a lot of people too, and we all messed up. You know? So it's all of us together. That was my way of motivating them. But, you know, really, so I, just for the record, I want to recognize both our general managers for their competence, their caring for the rape here, and their commitment, you know? And so, what we're going to do next, commissioners, do you have any further questions for our general manager? I was telling him I'm kind of blown away with the presentation.
Thank you for the excellent detail. It helps us. I know we meet monthly and there's a lot going on, but it, in many ways this review is as much for you to review yourself and think about it and what we have achieved or what you attempted to achieve. And I like the way you say this is what we shoot for and this is what we've achieved. Sometimes you exceed, sometimes you're short, but even in the few areas that your own goal, you're saying, hey, I didn't quite reach my own goal. First off, you have your own goal, and you acknowledge that this fiscal year, maybe fell a little short, but that just motivates you to, how do I get it back? Because I noticed in a number of these metrics, if there was an off year, the subsequent year was much stronger. It showed that you were reacting to, hey, I want to improve this area, and you have produced improvements. And thank you for that great effort.
Well, thank you. Yes.
Now we'll see. Now we'll see how we score.
Now we'll get down to the score.
Thank you, Miguel.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a nice afternoon.
Thank you.
Okay.
Can we just go into the scoring? Let's not take a break. I want to try and finish.
Okay, let's go quick.
Is Lou with us for a second?
Yes, where's Lou?
I'm just wondering
but
if
But I was going to run the leisure.
Yeah, what? Can one I second. A two-minute okay. recess?
Two-minute recess.
Okay. I'm thinking if she can score while we go along.
Yes.
And then we can, because I think they did John's score. I just don't know what it is. And then if she can score while we go along, then hit enter. And let me talk to her about it.
Talk to her about it. And I need these things.
I'll be right back. Am I not getting all?